Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, this is Mary Robson for Nature Now in the first week of September, ending in Labor Day weekend. September 1st should be New Year's Day, with so many changes in activities happening, and that back-to-school feeling that all of us perennial students get. Charlie Fleischman, our invaluable engineer, will join me in reading observations. If it weren't for Charlie, this show would be bits and scraps. But first, before we go forward, the mystery sound. This is best heard during fall and winter from a boat.
Observations. Wild and unusual winds, impossible to ignore, tore up the landscape on Saturday, August 29th. Gusts at Whidbey Island Naval Air Station, 70. Brennan recorded 55 miles per hour, Port Ludlow 52 at their highest. Hood Canal Bridge closed for 2 hours. Electricity winked out as trees landed on lines. Say thanks to the linemen who worked to return the power. Rain, desperately needed, fell in varying amounts. Weather guru Cliff Mass noted over 4 inches on the southeast side of the Olympics, must have been quite high up, with much smaller amounts everywhere else. Enough water came to clear the air and wash off dusty plants. The result was a sparkling morning on Sunday the 30th. Heat. Yes, it's been a hot summer. By August 31st, Seattle recorded 12 days over 90 degrees. Just to notice how peculiar and even weird our weather has been, Seattle had more 90-degree days than either Chicago or Boston. Take heart. Portland, Oregon suffered through 27 days over 90 this summer. Yikes. That's nearly a whole month. That information is from weatherman Scott Sistek of Como.
It's nice to be back in a sweater, isn't it, to have things a little cooler around here. A gathering of bird watchers. From the far southwest of the peninsula, we had a report from Bruce Labar, who attended the annual Washington Ornithological Society meeting, which was held at Ocean Shores in late August. Their pelagic birding trip, concentrating on seabirds, included seeing both flesh-footed and short-tailed shearwaters, red phalaropes, caissons auklets, and tufted puffins. In the larger animal department, they saw one gray whale, one minke whale, and one orca. Yes, they were out at sea. They also reported a south polar skua, which is seldom seen from shore on this continent, according to Audubon. So we know they were out in a boat. But do you wonder what that south polar skua was doing in Ocean Shores? They migrate from Antarctica in the summer, usually as far as Northern California. So this one was a little farther north. They then return to the South Pole area for nesting in November and December. Skuas are obviously very tough birds to leave the Pacific for Antarctica. They also don't care for people on their nesting grounds. My son and I abandoned a trail on the Shetland Islands because he was being dive-bombed by skuas. He's 6'3", and they go for the tallest target. In other Westside birding news, John Gatchett saw a rare Manx shearwater from Overlook No. 6 of the Olympic National Park coastal strip, halfway to Destruction Island. Manx shearwaters migrate over 8,000 miles between their northern breeding grounds and the Southern Ocean. Let's hope that rare bird, the Manx shearwater, was somewhere safe when winds reached 87 miles per hour at Destruction Island in the great windstorm last Saturday.
Keeping trails clear. Closer to home, the Washington Trails Association has been busy helping all of us hikers access the trails on the Hood Canal Ranger District. We ran into a group of them camping out for a week up on the Dungeness River Trail, installing low bridges over muddy depressions in the trail. The Forest Service would be lost without this amazing all-volunteer organization, which is instrumental in keeping trails maintained all over the state. Their next work party in our area was on Tuesday, September 1st, up Tunnel Creek. Go to their very informative website, WTA.org, to learn more. This information is from Deborah Kelso, who knows the trails.
Finally, in observations, earwigs. Some of you may have noticed that I really like writing and looking at and thinking about insects. Well, earwigs. I've noticed a number of these lately. They startle people because in spite of being only 3/4 of an inch long, they have rather fierce-looking pincers at the ends of their bodies. They are brown and rather flat. They don't bite. They will not hide in your ears. And especially, they will not get caught in your wig. But old myths about them said so. There may have been something about cleanliness in houses hundreds of years ago where the earwigs did get caught in your wig, but not anymore. They hide in crevices during the day, eating insects and plants at night. They are considered beneficial because they eat aphids, mites, fungi, and plant debris. However, they can also damage tender crops. Female earwigs tend their eggs by turning them to prevent fungal damage. That may not seem like much, but it's a lot of motherly care for an insect. Earwigs let us use one great word. They like to hide in places like rolled paper or leaf piles where they feel pressure on both sides of their bodies. This makes them thigmotropic. So thigmotropic is your big word for the day, meaning getting pressure on both sides if you're an insect. Cockroaches are thigmotropic, and so are silverfish. Now we'll get to listen to Kate Dwyer again, interviewing me exactly 1 year ago on spiders and spider webs.
Let's get into talking about spiders, Mary. How'd you get interested in it?
I was an extension agent for WSU, and people brought in samples of all kinds of things. And I discovered that I had a little bit of spookiness about spiders.
Don't we all?
and I started studying them and got so fascinated that, as people will know, that often fascination overcomes fear.
Absolutely.
And that's what happened with me with spiders.
Great. So let's start out with your basic facts. What it seems like there's a lot more spiders around now because we've seen their nest, right? But not their nest, their webs. But that's not the case, is it?
There are spiders that are active and mature every month of the year in the Pacific Northwest. It's a surprise because you don't really expect it. And what happens this time of year is that, think of the vegetables in your garden getting mature. A lot of the seeds that were planted for these spiders grew up through the summer and got mature, and they're old enough and big enough to be mating. So what we're seeing is grown-up spiders during their mating season, and several of them have the types of webs, like the beautiful orb web that most people can recognize. These are at eye level with us, so that we, as we're walking, are more aware, and we say, oh, it's spider time, when actually there are spiders all the time, but many of them are down in the leaf litter and hiding behind stones and in the corners of the garden where you wouldn't see them. So it's the maturity of certain spiders this time of year that we see them more. I think it was the 8th of August I first walked into a web that got sticky on my face, and I went, ooh, they're back, but they're not back. It's just that the ones that are active are very noticeable this time of year.
Right. How many kinds of spiders are around here?
Most of these have been studied by a wonderful individual named Rod Crawford, who is at the Burke Museum. And I just strongly suggest that all of you go to the Burke Museum website and look up his spider myths, because a lot of my understanding of spiders has come from the 40 years or so that Rod has spent studying these. He documented 170 different spiders in the Seattle area. Those were the ones that he could find. There are undoubtedly lots more than that, especially when we consider the volume of woods area that we have out here on the Olympic Peninsula.
Right.
Of the 170, about 25 of them are inclined to live in houses, which doesn't always make people tremendously happy, but that's true.
So there's types within that. The orb, what other kinds are there?
I have studied spiders by looking at the kinds of webs that they make. Because if you start thinking about it, there's the orb web. That's the one you see everywhere at Halloween, as if it were the only spider web.
Right.
There's a funnel web, which is the hobo spider or the giant house spider makes that web. And it looks exactly like a funnel. You'll see it at the edge of a wood pile tucked in. And you're looking directly down into the funnel from the wide end outside, looking down into the narrow end.
Right.
There is a kind that is called a sheet web, and there are a couple of variants, but one I saw this morning on Maui over here is called the bowl and doily web. This is crazy because what it is, it's shaped like a bowl. It's about 6 inches across, and at the bottom of the bowl is a flat web that would be the doily part. They are sometimes called the filmy bowl spiders. The spider lives inside, and they're a small spider. I looked at this morning. They're less than 3/8 of an inch across, but they sure build a big web. The tree that I looked at, which was a little Mugo pine, had 5 of these webs in it, which makes you wonder, why would 5 spiders set up housekeeping in the same same tree?
But
they
did. Must be good eating around there.
Yep, they stick together. The last kind is weirdly called the cobweb.
Oh, I have lots of those in my house.
And there are some spiders that are called cobweb spiders, and the cobweb is that messy mess that you find in the corner of an untended room. Mm-hmm. Not, of course, our untended rooms. It's a web that really has no distinct shape.
It
goes
messy.
Every which way. It's just messy. It belongs quite often to what is called the cellar spider or the daddy longlegs that lives up by the ceiling in your basement.
I see.
Or my basement. I'm going to take no responsibility for anybody else's basement.
Well, I bet like anything a person gets interested in, all of a sudden you start seeing more. I bet has your interest meant that whereas I might just notice the orb web, you're looking around and finding a lot more?
I was thrilled this morning because I hadn't seen one of these filmy bowl spiders in quite a while. I don't know whether that means I looked them up. They are mature this time of year, and they will be more present. They are also looking for mates, and they're so tiny that you would think that looking for a mate would be kind of a rugged thing to do, but there they are. And I was delighted to see them. It was a great deal of fun.
That's great. So let's get into what the spiders eat and who eats the spiders.
Uh-huh. We were talking earlier about the benefits of spiders. My first feeling about the benefits of spiders is they are great predators of little insects. Mm-hmm. People who would like to see their plants not quite being bothered by aphids or gnats, etc. Spiders clear out a lot of insects. They also have the capacity to provide for themselves food for other things. Hornets are great predators of spiders. I would rather have a spider than a hornet, but it's all part of the natural run of things.
What about birds?
Birds also eat spiders. Mm-hmm. And it depends on the bird and the situation. I have never seen it happening, but I know that it does.
Right.
It's all part of the balance of life. And one of the things I really appreciate is living in Port Townsend where we have such clear air. If you have spiders in your garden, it really means that there aren't any pesticides in the air because they're really sensitive to pesticides.
So they're an indicator of...
They are a good indicator of a healthy garden. And the other part is that if you used a pesticide and got rid of all the gnats and other little insects, what would the spider be eating?
Right. Tell us about hummingbirds and spiders.
Hummingbirds make these wonderful nests that are about the size of a walnut. Both Annis and Rufus here will do this. They gather spider webs and wrap them into the nest as they're building it to keep the nest from falling apart. They use them as glue.
And that's absolutely essential?
It is. Uh-huh. If they haven't got something like the spider web to hold it together. This is true of hummingbirds in other parts of the world, too. But here, particularly, those two use it. And I've been thinking about Annis, which is beginning to winter over here, builds nests pretty early in the spring. And if we didn't have spiders that overwinter and provide spider web, they wouldn't be able to get a hummingbird nest built in March.
Well, that's fascinating. I've never heard that before. Wow.
I just made it up. But it's true.
Well, yeah, it's a, what would you could call a deduction.
It is a deduction. Thank you, Kate. It's a deduction.
Okay, so let's talk about the fact, first of all, not, as you told me earlier, not all spiders make webs, but they all make silk. Right?
Exactly.
So tell us about this amazing product, silk.
If someone has 8 legs, they might be a mite or they might be a tick. But if they have 8 legs and can make silk, they are always a spider.
Uh-huh.
Spider silk is a protein. So in order to make something that is a protein, you have to eat a lot of protein. That makes them
carnivores.
They're carnivores, mostly. And the spider silk itself is made within the body of the spider. And then it is essentially extruded, for those of you who are engineers. It's extruded out of what are called spinnerets. And what the spider does is to let loose the fiber, and the fiber is, as it stretches, not as it hits the air, but as the spider actually pulls on it, steps away from it, attaches it to something, it's the tug that makes the spider web solid.
Uh-huh.
And some spiders will use them as little ladders or trapezes by having the wind catch the web as they're releasing it and mm-hmm. catches the silk. The wind picks it up, drops it onto a leaf, and then the spider senses that it's landed and pulls. And when it pulls, then it has a firm foundation, such as what you would use for making a web.
Wow. I wonder if they actually, I don't know if anyone studied this, but if they actually wait until there's a breeze to let out one of those long lines. It'd be very hard to figure out.
There's been a lot of study of how does an orb-weaving spider decide where to put the web.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at one in an azalea as we were coming into the station mm-hmm. today, which was in a somewhat sheltered part of a tree, 4 feet off the ground. That doesn't necessarily mean that they would always be choosing that same sort of location, so nobody's quite sure.
Mm-hmm.
Why does the spider decide? Although I know when you look at an orb web, it has to have a good bit of vertical space to hang in where there's not a piece of tree coming through it. So
right.
it has to drop into an open space.
Uh-huh. And don't they have more than one kind of silk?
They do, and this is the craziest thing. How come they don't catch themselves in their webs? If you get a sticky spider web in your face when you're walking, you go, wah.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
I've been caught.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is that spiders can produce from 1 to 7 different kinds of silk. A spider like the orb-weaving spider may produce 3. One of them is a dry line, which they can walk on.
Mm-hmm.
And the circular ones that you see that are the spiral in the center of the web are made with little droplets that make them sticky.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that the fly that flies in struggles because it's stuck.
Uh-huh.
And the struggle and the fact that it can't easily depart makes it possible for the spider to rush up on a dry line and wrap it up. One of the people I read about it said if a spider steps on a wet line, it's a little like a human stepping on a piece of gum. They don't think much of it. I don't think that's a great analogy, but they also make a special kind of silk that is used for wrapping egg casings, and they make a special kind of silk that can also be used to extend the web's length of life. It's
like a protective something.
It's really astonishing.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and one special kind wraps the prey, and a different kind wraps the eggs.
Oh
we were talking about the fact that spider silk is waterproof.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't thought about this till I started studying them, but they can go right through a rainstorm. I saw outside the community center in January last year, I saw a whole bush full of spider webs, which were horizontal to the rain, which mm-hmm. was falling, and they were all perfectly solid.
So they're both waterproof and strong.
They're waterproof and extremely strong.
And does that have anything to do with the Charlotte Webb story?
If you remember, Wilbur, Charlotte dies, and all of us go into a funk, and Wilbur, who is smarter than the average pig, realizes that Charlotte has left an egg casing. He picks it up in his mouth and carries it back to the barn and tucks it in where it ultimately hatches Charlotte's children. E.B. White researched spiders, and he knew from his research that it would be physically possible for an egg casing to make it home in the mouth of a pig, as long as the pig
because
didn't cough or swallow, because it is waterproof. it's
amazing
stuff.
Yes. Well, speaking of egg casings, tell us a little bit about their life history. Do those they overwinter in those cases somewhere?
Some do and some don't. Some
okay.
spiders, according to Rod Crawford, spiders can make it down to about 23 degrees Fahrenheit without freezing to death. I think it depends on the spider, but they're very mm-hmm. good at tucking themselves into woods, especially woods litter and places. None of us should keep completely clean gardens because all of the natural world needs litter.
Debris.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big debris fan.
Uh-huh.
In any case, some of them go into the leaf litter, but many of them, like the beautiful orb spiders, mate, lay their eggs, wrap up the eggs, the whole mass of eggs, in its egg case, tuck the egg case in a safe place. I've seen them at the edges of fence posts and in trees. And then that mother spider dies, and the babies spend the winter in the casing and come out in the early spring.
Right.
So what we're seeing now in what we call spider time is the grown-ups who made it through life after hatching in the spring.
And they don't live longer than the 1 year or one season.
Some do, but very seldom.
Very seldom.
Yeah.
Lastly, I want to talk about there's a lot of kind-hearted types who think they're going to save the spiders by taking their indoor spiders and carefully
putting
them outside.
Right.
Let's clear that up.
Okay. It's a little bit hard to imagine because we associate a spider web with someone who isn't housekeeping as clearly as they should be. And I think that is mostly because of going into old buildings where there's been a long time where there's been no one living. Mm-hmm. And you'll get a tremendous amount of spider detritus and debris. Most of the spiders, like the cellar spider, which is a phocid, most of them are adapted to live inside a house or a building like a barn, not outside.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to go get my cellar spiders, I let you know, lay a towel across them and gently carry them outside and say, oh, goody, you're back home. They're mm-hmm. not. They're already home when they're in your house.
Right.
So either you have to decide you don't want to live with them, or you have to say you are sort of a miracle, and I think it's fine if you're up in the cellar there. They are a little messy.
They are a miracle.
They are.
Well, people have fear of spiders, too, whether it's rational or not. We don't have poisonous spiders here,
we
right?
do not. Yeah. The two that worry people the most are the brown recluse and the black widow spider. I can remember my father in California when I was a very little child having a bad experience by being bitten by a black widow. He survived nicely. It was just mm-hmm. it was just a bite. There are black widows on some parts of the San Juan Islands.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, other than east of the mountains, we have no spiders here that are really going to hurt us in any serious way.
Right.
If you held one too tight against your sleeve because you picked up a piece of stove wood without looking at it and sort of crushed it against you, you might get slightly bitten, but it's not.
I've been bitten and it swelled up a little bit, but
sure.
It's not life-threatening or
no,
anything.
No, it's not. Mm-hmm. But I think that the shape and size of spiders, the way they scuttle, their legs, the Halloween effect, literature. I mean, Tolkien, whom I deeply appreciate, really laid into spiders when he created Shelob, which is, I read The Lord of the Rings out loud at one point, the whole three chapters. And when I got to the one about Shelob, the spider, I had to stop reading. It was just too awful.
So horrific.
It was so horrific. And these fears may build on fears from those of us who were ancient in the tropics a long, long time ago, may have more reason to be frightened than we should be locally. But mm-hmm. it's hard to look a spider in the eye in a photo and feel real comfortable because they just aren't gorgeous.
Are there YouTubes that show in slow motion spiders weaving their webs?
There's YouTubes for almost everything.
Of course.
And I haven't seen one, but it would be interesting.
It would. Especially
be.
Now that you tell me that they have so many kinds of silk.
Oh. And you can't tell as an observer from the outside what kind of silk you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to keep in mind that no one spider makes all seven kinds. The most important ones and the ones that have been studied the most are these strong fibers that make the structure of the webs.
Right.
Those are the ones that people would like to say, well, it's very strong, like Kevlar almost, mm-hmm. that if we could make protective gear out of spider web, how wonderful it would be.
They're probably studying it and making the synthetic
They're
versions.
Studying it. And the craziest thing that has been done is to splice DNA of spider into goats, milk the goats. This happened, actually. Milk the goats and then see if you could extract spider web from the goat milk.
Sounds crazy.
Well, there are some goats floating around in Idaho, I think, which have had this happen, and it didn't work, and it didn't result in anything, but somewhere there are spider web producing goats. So you don't want it in your cheese. If your cheese looks really stringy and is in a strange shape, don't eat it.
Forget about it. All right. Well, thanks, Mary. That's all the time we have for spiders today, but that was fascinating.
I checked the garden this weekend, and I have noticed two kinds of spider webs, bowl and doily, which is a curved web looking like a bowl laid over a doily, and cobwebs, which have no particular shape at all. They're messy. I have not seen any of the beautiful orb webs yet. Our mystery sound is the marbled murrelet. A few weeks ago, we heard from Kevin Schmelzlin of the Marbled Murrelet Survival Project. He said, a good place to hear these seabirds is Heart of the Hills Campground in May or early June when they come in to nest in the large old-growth conifers. They fly in from the sea, and after they have eggs, they return to the sea to get fish for their young. They're having trouble surviving for a number of reasons, and one of them is the fish they eat have become smaller and less available over about the last 40 years. They used to get a whole bellyful from one sardine or one big anchovy, but the bigger fish are getting scarce. They eat krill, so do whales, and much more work goes into keeping themselves fed. This means they have had to abandon the inland nests while hunting at sea. It's also harder to get food back to the fledglings, and the fledglings are then more likely to be nabbed by a crow, a raven, or other predators. It is not easy being a marbled murrelet. Events: Wednesday, September 2nd, at the Jefferson County Library, 6:30 p.m., Elaine Grinnell will share stories of her people, the Jamestown Tsklallam. It is first in a series of four presentations on local Native Americans, and I have heard Elaine speak, and she really knows her stories.
Summer stewardship at Lower Chimicum Creek, sponsored by the Jefferson Land Trust. Work party September 10th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., North Preserve on Lower Chimicum Creek, Port Hadlock.
And finally, if it's Labor Day weekend, the Wooden Boat Festival can't be far behind. The Wooden Boat Festival this year is September 11th, 12th, and 13th. It is completely iconic for Port Townsend. Ours alone. A great time to celebrate how we get out on the water. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic, eclectic, and local news of the natural community where we live. Nature Now airs at noon Wednesdays with repeats here on Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. Recent shows are also available on the website as podcasts, www.kptz.org.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Today's closing music is I'm an Arachnid by Leah Cornwell.
Two.